Ty Felber with Chmielewski drops him the puck. Chmielewski, though, can't control it. Can the Generals get it out? No. Ryder across the blue line. Maksimovich to the net. Threw it across the crease. Felber scores! 20 seconds in, what looked like a broken play. And Kyle Kaiser can't believe it. Ty Felber, an unbelievable regular season, 59 goals in the regular season. He was great in the playoffs as well, with another 9-2 in this one tonight. Ends the season for the Oshawa Generals.
Following is a presentation of the OHL Fanboys Podcast.
Are you tired of hearing opinions from experts and people who do it for a living?
Shut up and get to the point!
It's the OHL Fanboys Podcast. Weekly recaps, trade rumors, jersey talk, and some special guests. All things you can probably do without.
Your ideas are intriguing to me, and I wish to subscribe to your newsletter.
Too bad it's a podcast. Welcome to the 21st century, and welcome to another episode of OHL Fanboys with Steve McClain and Brian Thompson.
Welcome to the OHL Fanboys Podcast, Season 5, Episode 31. The Saginaw Spirit have done it. They have come back from down 3-1 to win their first ever... Okay. Welcome to the OHL Fanboys Podcast, Season 5, Episode 31. The Ottawa 67s, like Becky Lynch, Eastern Conference and Western Conference champions, will get the bye to the Memorial Cup. The London Knights were granted a Game 8 and went on to defeat the Saginaws.
No!
Take four. What other possibilities? The Brantford Alexander. Nah,
Brian is really trying not to go there, folks.
All right. Welcome to the OHL Fanboys Podcast, Season 5, Episode 31. I'm Brian Thompson. Steve McClain is driving on I-75 as, once again, the Gulf Storm decided to take the first couple games off of a series and then have some dramatic ass comeback on the road because, you know, television ratings are through the roof on public access. I don't get this. I just don't get what the heck is Guelph doing.
I'm as speechless as you are, sir. We all thought they were done after game 3 against London. We thought they were done again after game 4 against
Saginaw. You did. I said, hold up. Seen this movie.
I mean, it's one of those things where I'm always the pessimist, though, and realist, too. And it's one of those, hey, you know, they did it against London, but man, just something felt that these two, winning a game against Saginaw, and then they came back and laid an egg on home ice in game 4, and it just, man, it doesn't look good. Now they got to go back to Saginaw. And, man, they dominated Saginaw these last 3 games. I know the score tonight for Game 7 was really close, but Guelph, you know, controlled the play for most of the night, and that's pretty much what the last 2 games were like, just with wider scores. And I don't know, man. I'm just, like, after Game 7 in London, this is surreal to me right now.
We'll get to the Eastern Conference Final later because you all know what happened there. That was a fucking week ago. But we'll start with, like, Game 5. Guelph's down 3-1. They go back to Saginaw. It's Arena. They lost their first 2 in. It's looking kind of dicey. You're not even watching the game.
I was at work, yeah. I had to go in for like an 8 p.m. start, so I was listening to it.
And then they just beat the shit out of them.
Dmitry Samarukov happened, who was the OHL Player of the Week. He had a hat trick and 4 points as a defenseman, and they were nice goals, too. It's not like he was lobbing them from the point. Guelph wins 4-0. Anthony Popovich, who didn't have a shutout all regular season, gets a second shutout of the playoffs. You know, it gave them life again. And it was a rink that Guelph had problems winning in this year. Like, they had not won the first 2 games of the series down there. Their last game there in the regular season, they lost in a shootout. The one game they had won all year down in Saginaw, they blew a 5-0 lead and won in overtime. So, you know, it was nice to see them get a pretty decisive win in Game 5, and it just kind of sparked that comeback.
So it's like, all right, we've seen Saginaw do this with the Sioux, and then they went game six and on the road and just kicked the shit out of the Greyhounds, and that's going to be that. And then it was 5-0 Guelph. And we're just like, okay, they're doing this again, I guess.
Total domination in Guelph, or in Guelph, I should say, yeah, by Guelph in game five. Popovich six. Was six, sorry. Yeah, well, they dominated.
You're confusing your comeback,
yeah,
sir.
Jeez. In game six in Guelph, Popovich was 232 away from back-to-back shutouts. You know, who was it? Pavel Gogolev, you know, got a couple of goals. You know, this was a... Last couple games, we really haven't seen a ton of goals from the big guys, except Nick Suzuki. We'll get there in a second. But Popovich was really good. Sam Barukov's great once again. But yeah, Nick Suzuki, like, that goal in game six, holy crap, man. Like, just, I am not worthy. You know, that was insanity to get that goal. And it was really kind of the backbreaker. We were still up 2-0, and, you know, Saginaw's still in it, even though Guelph was out playing them. But once he got that goal, it was just like, man, this is done.
So, 24 hours later, it's like, all right, shit, we got to go back to Saginaw.
I wasn't missing this.
No, and I wasn't either, especially if I can make you go 3 hours out of your way. But I'm like, oh, crap, it's raining again. Saginaw's arena's not going to hold up. Fans aren't going to really turn out because it's not that much notice. It's a Monday. No, man. Great atmosphere.
Yeah.
From the second we got to Saginaw, the fans, they're the nicest fans in the league. You've never seen a fan base, like, go out of their way to try to be nice. And it's like, this is blew my mind when the Disco Stew popped by us to tell us, Saginaw, in their 17-year history, first ever Game 7. Not first Game 7 at home. First game seven.
Yeah.
That's got to be the only OHL, well, Flint aside or any of these new teams, that have not had a game seven yet. That's insane.
Yeah, maybe Hamilton. But yeah, like, other than the new teams, that's got to be the only team without a game seven. It's insane that it took them, what, 17 years to do it. I know Brampton only ever played two in 15 seasons, but yeah, it's insane. And like, I do want to mention the fans too. You know, we were down there for game one. And obviously game seven, you know, a game where Saginaw kicked the crap out of Guelph, and then a game where Guelph wins. Didn't matter the score or who was winning or what, or game situations. All the fans in Saginaw, fantastic. We had, you know, ushers and policemen and everyone, you know, send well wishes and all that. It was fantastic. Kudos to Saginaw. And I want to say this. I know some people are probably going to be like, oh, yeah, sure you are. But I legit felt bad that Guelph had to do this against Saginaw. If Saginaw was playing anybody else,
Oshawa.
I would have wanted Saginaw to win this series. You know, it's cool. I like it when teams who haven't won before win things. But they're going up against Storm. What am I going to do? I got to cheer for the Storm. So I feel bad that Saginaw's road ended, but what doesn't make me feel bad is the fact that Saginaw is built to be back here again next year. You know, yeah, they made a couple big moves to the deadline this year, but they've got, you know, they've got a big, a really good core coming back next year. They can go all in again and be here next year. They're going to have to beat London and do it, but we're not going to be here next year. So, hey, you never know when you're going to be back in this position.
It was weird vibes when we came in, because it wasn't like game one where it was like a party atmosphere. Hey, we finally made it. Now it's like oh, shit. We know what Guelph did already, and now we've just blown two chances to win this thing. And, you know, they had the home ice advantage, and Saginaw, I can't remember who, Saginaw get the first goal?
Tonight, yes.
Yeah, Saginaw had the first goal. And the fans were loud. The fans were going, but as the second period was starting to go, like, Guelph tied it before we got to intermission, but just as the second period was starting to go, you're starting to see the Saginaw fans go, ooh, like, just the energy level was gone for Saginaw. I'd say 5 minutes in the second period.
Guelph started out playing them probably about maybe, I don't know, a few minutes after Saginaw had gotten the lead. You know, Saginaw was the better team for about the first 5 minutes, and even then Guelph just looked kind of slow, really, more so than Saginaw being good. After that, Guelph really took over. They got the tying goal about halfway through the first, I guess. And from there, you know, obviously I was, you know, a ball of nerves, but the way that they were playing the game, I mean, you said it all night. You're like, Saginaw's getting tired. Guelph has got this amazing pace going. You never really thought that Saginaw was going to win this game.
No, and that's when it started to get weird. And I'm a big, not like InfoWars conspiracy theories, but I love a good conspiracy theory. Early in the first period, one of Saginaw's bench doors breaks off. Just completely off. I've never seen that before. But I make the joke that Wendler Arena's falling apart, so haha, there's one of the bench. But then the other one breaks off later, and I'm just like, did they loosen those up just to get little timeouts because they were tired?
Well, the first one, I wouldn't say so, because when the first door broke off, the hinges, it was what? Like, it was before Saginaw scored their first goal, so that was like maybe 2 minutes into the game. And so that one, you know, I wouldn't think anything of.
Yeah, they did that on purpose, so you wouldn't think when they do it the second time.
Yeah, when was the second?
It was like the third.
It was late in the third, too. Yeah. Like, I don't know, it might have been right after the double minor.
Something like that.
Yeah. It was just, yeah, I don't know. It was odd, but, you know, just another one of those crazy things.
See, you're just totally accepting. I don't know. I seen the spits.
I'm trying to be a good winner here.
Why? What's the point? And then, yeah, it was just Saginaw couldn't put two shots on net together before Guelph was clearing the puck. Guelph was more than happy to sit back a bit, but they were pushing all second period, and then they finally get tired.
Yeah, Guelph was really, you know, they had a whole bunch of great chances in the second period. Lennox, again, was fantastic tonight. That save he made on Nate Schnarr in the second period, just incredible. Schnarr had the whole open net, it seemed like. But, yeah, Guelph had their chances to really put this away in the second period, and they didn't, and that was what was kind of made me nervous, you know, and going into the third. Guelph had they had that power play kind of early in the first for Saginaw's too many men. They came into the third period with a power play, couldn't score on that. And then when the third had started, you know, basically it was Saginaw pushing, but they never got any real momentum going. Like, you know, Guelph's doing a good job blocking shots, winning puck battles, but the play kind of shifted, and it was mainly in the Guelph end in the third period. Saginaw took that high sticking penalty with
6 minutes left.
No, it was about 8:45 left.
Yeah, but because it was 4 minutes.
Yeah, it was a 4 minute penalty. So Guelph, it's like, okay, well, at worst, I guess we're gonna try and, you know, kill some time here. But at the same time, it's like, man, just get a goal now and end this thing.
And they couldn't.
And it looked bad. The power play did not look good at all.
Really bad tonight.
Yeah, it was most nights, I'd say. But you know, Saginaw, they pulled the goalie with about 2:40 left.
Yeah.
Which, to me, is a little early still when you're down by one. But the Dale Hunter approach, I guess. I don't know. Guelph got the empty net goal by Suzuki with, I think it was about a minute 20 to go. I was jumping around like crazy, figuring it was over. And then the very next shift, they dropped the puck. And within, I think it was like 15 seconds, bad giveaway by Guelph. And Giroux scored his second of the game. It was a nice goal, too. He went backhand top shelf.
Aside from the hand on the puck penalty at the very end, did Saginaw have a power play all game?
No, they did not. Saginaw had 2 seconds of power play time all game. So, yeah, Guelph took their only penalty. We thought the game was over. There was Guelph had iced it with 3 seconds left. Face off in the storm zone. Schnarr won the draw, but he kind of did it by basically grabbing the puck and throwing it into the corner. The game ended, so to speak, and, you know, the Storm all pile off the bench. We're celebrating, like, you know, we won, and then I saw the refs start congregating, and I thought right away, I'm like, oh shit, they're gonna, and basically that's what they did. The game continued. Like, there was
photographers. 2.6 they made it.
There were photographers all over the ice already. Like, it was over.
Thank God they couldn't afford confetti.
The refs basically kicked them all off, put the teams back on the benches, and gave Guelph a penalty, and it was their only penalty of the game, but they ended up winning the draw again with 2.6. That was a long time to set up the penalty, though. Like, it felt like 5 minutes.
Well, I wanted to get back to the penalty. You just keep skipping ahead because you're so freaking amped up, which I totally understand. I'm not the type of person who, after a game, thinks that all the penalties have to be even, and if you call one on one, you call one on the other. No, penalties occur when someone fucks up.
Yeah.
Guelph didn't fuck up tonight. Guelph played an extremely disciplined game. They weren't the most energetic team, which completely understandable. They're going into a series with Ottawa, playing six more games than the other team. They've got to be exhausted. But they played such smart hockey that, yeah, the refs didn't have shit to call on them. There was a bunch of banging in the crease, but Popovich, he was staying in his crease. He's more than free to clock someone across the head if he wants to, as long as he's within his, you know, blue boundary. And it wasn't like Saginaw played completely undisciplined either, but it's just those couple little... It's not so much, I was telling Steve, it's not so much that you do something with the power play, it's what the power play takes away from the other team.
Yeah.
And Saginaw, it's not like they were doing anything shorthanded either.
No, you know, when they had the 4-minute kill in the third period, I said that Saginaw was probably going to be aggressive on it. Because you tried to point out that they couldn't afford to be aggressive, and I said they couldn't afford not to be aggressive. Because they're down by one, and maybe they could catch Guelph sleeping when they got four forwards out there. And they tried to be a little aggressive, but they just couldn't get anything going. As far as the being disciplined and stuff, there was a few times in the first period where Lennox was throwing some shots, and there was that one play where Suzuki got cross-checked into Lennox, and then everyone piled on top of him because he hit the goalie, even though their own defense pushed him in. But I'm sure if you ask some Spirit fans, they might disagree as far as Guelph being disciplined. But I didn't think they did anything too bad. There might have been one or two penalties here and there. I mean, right in that first few 10-15 minutes of the game, we thought we saw a couple penalties on both sides where it's like, okay, it's game seven, they're not calling shit tonight. In the end, there ended up only being four penalties in the entire game, which I think is for the OHL is pretty low.
Just
Guelph played a very disciplined game. They played a very good road game. I think you said it really well. They seemed, again, not the most energetic team in the world, but they seem to have a bit more in the tank than Saginaw did. And to be fair, you know, both these teams, Guelph may have played way more games than their next opponent, but they have only played one more game than Saginaw had. You know, Saginaw had a tough second round with the Sioux. So, that's about all I've got.
I know it's going to be talked ad endem by a lot of people through the years, but I'll kiss Guelph's ass right here and now. To take both division winners, be down 3-0 and 3-1 to them, not have home ice advantage, and make these comebacks is nothing short, especially in this day and age of the OHL where you have the haves and the have-nots, was simply unreal. Guelph is always one of those middle-of-the-pack teams where they're not going to get all the crazy commits, but they're not going to have people turning them away either. They just got to draft smart. And if there's any guy who knows how to deal with that, it's George Brunet. I thought he coached an excellent game tonight. That's not to take anything away from Saginaw's coaching. They were just wiped. And you could tell Guelph was a more conditioned team going into tonight as opposed to Guelph. And Guelph had only played one more game than Saginaw going in tonight.
I mean, I don't want to sit here praising one or the other. Like, Saginaw's a really good team. And like I said, I felt bad that they had to be the ones to lose this. I guess the question, some people might question, would this series have gone different if Prosbatov had gotten to play all the games, or if...
That's on him.
Yeah, or if, Justin Murray had gotten to play more, though. Honestly, I didn't think Murray was as big of a factor tonight, that he was back. And, I think a lot of people made the good point. Lennox was very good for the five games that he played in, plus, the end of game two.
He made some sweet glove saves tonight.
Yeah, he was... Again, during that second period when Guelph was pushing really hard, he was the reason why it wasn't already like 4-1 going into the third. So he kept them in it. I don't think the series could have gone any different. They couldn't have asked for better goaltending with the situation that they had.
So now we have to get to it. We are down to two. And I just have no nice way of putting this, Steve, but you're fucked. You're fucked not because
of... How many times have we already been fucked in the playoffs?
But, it's one thing that you won, all the... It's like Game of Thrones. You won these smaller battles, and that's great, but now the Night King's coming. The Night King's coming with the Sully of the Undead, who are 12-0, are rested as shit.
And yeah, they've been off for like a week. They've played six less games in the playoffs.
Who have home ice.
Yeah.
Who have an awesome goalie. Who have...
an awesome backup.
An awesome backup. Who have great scores. Who have a rabid fan base that haven't been to the final in 14 years.
Haven't won a title in 17 years. Or no, 18 years, sorry.
I want the story to continue for you guys. And I think beating Ottawa, I don't care how you do it, would be more incredible than what you did against London and Saginaw.
Yeah.
But... it,
the odds aren't good. I'll give you that. They aren't good. Logic dictates that Ottawa should be mopping the floor with us. Logic dictates we should have been out. You know,
I want you to be proud that you're here as a four seed.
Yeah.
For one.
I remember, and Guelph's a four seed.
Niagara went there as a four seed, I think, once.
They did. I bet that, and that was, they didn't have a good, it was one of those years where they were supposed to be the one seed, and they just kind of dicked around for half the season and couldn't get the points back. But I remember trying to look back to see when was like the last time. Guelph ended up finishing the season with 90 points. I think they finished with 40 wins dead on. So I was trying to go back to see how long it had been since we had like a team with less than 90 points win an OHL championship. And oddly enough, you have to go back to the 2001 Ottawa 67s. And they did it with like 80, I think.
Yeah.
And they were five seed, I think, that year or something like that. I can't remember. So it's like the last time anyone who didn't have home ice won a title.
And I feel bad saying this shit on the car ride back from a Game 7 win after your second huge series in as many weeks. But the games are split up well enough that you might be all right. The only... Brian's scheduling, bitching, brought to you by...
Yes.
The only back-to-back is the Sunday-Monday of Game 6, 7.
Yeah. So it's the exact same days as this series was.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
I hate the Game 2, 2 p.m. puck drop in Ottawa.
Yeah. And that's Ottawa's shtick all year. That's one of their... They used to be a Friday night, Sunday afternoon team, but it seemed like once they got back to the Civic Center...
I'm sure that'll be a Sportsnet game, though.
It might be.
I'm sure it
especially
will.
If there's no afternoon NHL game that day.
I'm sure it will.
But, yeah, ever since they got back to the Civic Center, they kind of changed up their game plan. And they're like a Saturday afternoon, Sunday afternoon team now. They don't. I know they still do play Friday night home games, but not nearly as much. And, you know, they got the home ice, and they'll get their preferred days. At least they'll get one of those. Logic would dictate a Sunday or a Saturday night game, but screw it. They're going with the Saturday afternoon game, and
I don't have a basis of comparison with this. Closest I had was Windsor in 2010, where Barry got by Mississauga in 5 after sweeping their first two series, and we had to come back from 3 down to Kitchener to win in 7, and then have one day off and go up to Barry. But we had swept the first two series, so we weren't like completely wiped. This is a very, very unprecedented situation for any OHL team to have to go into playing 18 playoff games, and then having one, you know, day and a half off, because basically that travel to Ottawa is going to kill you.
Yeah.
And then going right back into it. It's the old rest versus rust thing, but this is an Ottawa team that's so talented. If we're doing predictions now, I'm going to be merciful and give you a game, but I say Ottawa in 5.
I can't not pick my team.
I'm not asking you to.
My brain is telling me one thing, but I got to go with my team at the end of the day. And screw it, keep going with them. Guelph in 7. Why not? Let's do it 3 in a row.
Okay, but how?
I don't know. Nick Suzuki's going to keep.
No. Are you coming back from 3-0, 3-1? What, like? Why can't you win early games?
I don't know. We haven't won a game 1 or 2 since the Kitchener series, which feels like a year ago now. Actually, I did read when Guelph went down 2-0 in this series, someone had said if they can come back and win it, they are the first ever OHL team to be down 2-0 in 2 series in the same year and come back to win both. And they were obviously down 3-0 in one of them, so... just, I don't know, no matter what happens from here, to me, it's like, I don't want to call it gravy because you still want to win the OHL championship, but like, what a team. Like, even if they don't pull this off, this is something I'll remember forever. I've had some top five moments here in this playoff run as my, in my time as a fan, and it's just incredible.
Same here. There was $2 Pabst Blues tonight. Good work, Saginaw. Like, yeah. Cheap beer, God bless you.
And the fact that the Blue Line Club is open to everyone now, even though it's not, what is it called now? The Red Room?
I don't know.
Something like that. So, yeah, it was an enjoyable trip, especially because of the win. But
you're going to game two?
I'm going to go to game two. I can't go to game one in Ottawa. I got to work all that day, and obviously, with the, was it 4 hours and a bit up there? I can't make it.
But, 5 and 7.
Yeah. No, I'm going to go to 2 and 7. I can't make it to game five. If the series goes a full 7, I'll be at games 2 and 7.
Freaking bandwagon fans.
Yeah, yeah.
So that does it from I-75. When we come back, we'll give a post-mortem on the OHL playoffs for the Saginaw Spirit with their play-by-play man, Mr. Joey Botano, here on the OHL Fanboys Podcast.
Suzuki tied it up, won it to the corner. Wild shoots, blocked, and there it is. Officially, the Guelph Storm are heading to the OHL Championship Series with a 3-2 win on the road. They come back from 3-1 down, and the Cinderella story continues for this Guelph Storm Hockey Club. They win the series 4-3 and will take on the Ottawa 67s in the OHL Championship Series.
Welcome back to the OHL Fanboys Podcast. Our guest this week is the play-by-play voice of the Saginaw Spirit, former guest. We welcome back to the show, Joey Botano. Joey, how are things going with you today?
Very good, Steve. Thanks for having me again. Great to be here and enjoy. I'm going to look forward to a good discussion here.
Well, there's certainly a lot to discuss between you and I on this episode of the show. We just witnessed a pretty crazy 7-game series between the Saginaw Spirit and the Guelph Storm. Unfortunately, on your side of things, the Spirit were not able to finish the series off, but you know, you've had some time to digest what's happened, the season that was for Saginaw, even though it's only been less than 48 hours here. But, you know, your kind of quick take on the season and the series as a whole, just, you know, when your initial thoughts of it at the moment.
Sure, yeah. No, I've had a couple of days now after the season ends to kind of look back, and I figured obviously it's a bitter pill when you have a 3-1 series lead and unable to close it out. But, you know, at the end of the day, it was a historic season for the Spirit, getting to a place that they had never gone before, into the third round in the Western Conference Championship. It was just the second time in team history that they had won a West Division Championship. So, even though at the end of the day, there's no trophy for this season, there is a banner, and those have been few and far between for the Spirit over the years. So a very successful season, and I think, you know, right now our fans are probably still a little disappointed that, you know, we couldn't come up with a win there in either, you know, game 5, 6, or 7. But I think, again, when they look back on it, especially the fans that have been with us for all 17 years, they're going to look back and say this was the most successful year in team history. And, you know, the good news and what I've discussed with multiple people over the last 48 hours is, you know, this is not just a situation where it's a one and done and Saginaw is back into a rebuild. You know, this is a team in my mind that can reload for the next season, maybe even two, and make another strong push for the division next year. And who knows, you know, Saginaw could be a team that could be right back where they were this year, next year.
Definitely. I know, I think a lot of people are sharing that sentiment about Saginaw. And I know a lot of people, myself included, felt a bit bad for them. I know if they had been playing anybody else other than Guelph, I was kind of pulling for them. It's always cool to see teams that haven't won things before come through and get a first championship. But a lot of people, you know, people can take solace in the fact that, you know, this is a team that could definitely be in this position next year. Part of that is the drafting that this team has done recently. You know, I think back to the draft 2 years ago where you guys, you know, the first two picks in your draft were Blade Jenkins and Bodie Wild, and, you know, at first those were guys that, you know, publicly at least had no inkling of going to the OHL whatsoever, and people figured it was a wasted draft for you guys, and, you know, you guys showed some patience on that one, and in the end it really has worked out for you.
Yeah, no question. I think everybody knew the situation with Bodie Wild. That would have been a 2018-19 draft selection anyway. He had made a two-year commitment to the U.S. program and was going to live up to that. So everyone was aware of that from a team and hockey ops standpoint when Bodie Wild was selected in the second round. Blade Jenkins did not make those same commitments. So we were able to talk to Blade, agent, family, everything like that right away. And, you know, we were pleasantly surprised, I think, as a whole, on his, he was receptive to the idea of playing in the OHL. And obviously, I think if he wasn't, I don't think that would have been a pick that Saginaw made, you know, a top five pick in the OHL draft had the spirit not known or had an inkling that he would be receptive to playing in the OHL. So I think it just built from there. Obviously, you know, Dave Drinkle, our general manager, has done a fantastic job growing the program from what it was. You know, Dave and I were hired just weeks apart in 2015, and I've had the pleasure of kind of watching him build this team from the ground up. And a lot of what needed to be addressed with this team is recruiting and how the team handled that execution of recruiting players and getting them to eventually play in Saginaw. And I think in this market where, you know, we are an American team in the OHL, there's so many great players in Michigan that are playing, whether it be in the U.S. program or the USHL or even, you know, minor midget here, that, you know, there's just a big talent pool of players that, you know, is available to us. And I don't want to say it's not available to some of the other OHL teams, but maybe it takes a little bit more to get those views of players that are playing at CompuWare or Honeybaked or what have you. So, you know, we have the luxury of those teams playing in our backyard. And I think our scouting staff has taken full advantage of that in terms of drafting and recruiting American-born players. And, you know, it's not just Jenkins and Wild, but it's, you know, Jake Goldowski, it's Cole Koski, it's Brock Hill. You know, it's a large number of American-born players that were a part of this roster, and DJ Buzdecker as well. So I think, like I said, I think this team's done a fantastic job of really taking advantage of the fact that, you know, we're in their backyard, and we're seeing these teams just as much as anybody else in terms of junior hockey in the United States.
And not just those U.S. players, but guys who were thinking about playing in the U.S., like a Cole Perfetti. I wanted to talk about him specifically. You know, there was talk about him, you know, going to Michigan as well. And he ends up in Michigan, but just in a different league. He plays for Saginaw. And, man, what a get for you guys on that. What a rookie season. I can't think of a more impactful rookie in the OHL than in a while than him. Just and shocking to me that he did not win Rookie of the Year this year. Your guys' leading scorer, and you know, as a Guelph fan who just watched a 7-game series against you guys, a player that scared the hell out of me as a Storm fan personally.
Yeah, you know, I think you hear a lot in the National Hockey League about, you know, guys who maybe play for San Jose or LA and Anaheim. They got the West Coast bias on some of these NHL awards. Maybe they don't just get as many views as guys who play in Toronto or Buffalo and out on the East Coast. I would liken that to this situation here with Saginaw. Maybe there's just not as many views of Cole Perfetti on any given night throughout the regular season. I don't know. That's the rationale I had to come up with for why he's not Rookie of the Year, because I just don't understand how a player that has 37 goals and 37 assists in his 16-year-old year is not the Rookie of the Year of the league. But as I said, he's just an incredible player, you know, really good kid off the ice. He was our Academic Player of the Year as well. So not only is he a star on the ice? He's a star off the ice as well. I'm looking forward to this 2020 NHL draft class for the OHL in particular. But when you think about, you know, Quentin Byfield and Cole Perfetti and some of these other 2020 draft eligibles, it's a good time, because I know 2019 is not a great year for the OHL in terms of draft eligibles. 2020 is going to be great, and the first round is going to be dominated by OHL talent. And I think should everything continue for Cole Perfetti, he's going to be right in the mix there in the first round come 2020. He's got all the tools to be an elite player, not just in the OHL, but in the National Hockey League in the future.
Yeah, definitely. And you mentioned Quentin Byfield, who was the one who walked away with the Rookie of the Year award. Certainly, no disrespect to him. He had an amazing season as well. But Cole Perfetti just blew me away with what I saw from him. And not just in the regular season, but like I mentioned, in the playoffs, he was a main contributor for this team as well. Like, and I know we're about to talk about 16-year-olds or rookie players at least contributing in the playoffs with somebody else on the team here in a minute. But that's not something you see too often in this league.
No, it's not. And you know, having him pitch in the playoffs as well was really important, because, as you know, Steve, the games get a little tougher. The areas in which to score, it becomes a little tighter. Everything's a little bit more refined. I would argue that teams play much more defensively and tight to the vest in the playoffs than they do in the regular season, specifically in our league, where I think in the OHL sometimes in the regular season, defense and goaltending could be a little tough to come by on any given night. In the OHL playoffs, certainly teams tighten up. I thought Guelph was the better defending team out of the two teams in the Western Conference Final, and I believe at the end of the day, that is why they walk away with the Wayne Gretzky Trophy. And just to say again, with Guelph playing so tight defensively and so many big kids on that team, it was so impressive to see, you know, a little 16-year-old and Cole Perfetti still getting to the front of the net, still getting grade A scoring opportunities, and still finishing on those opportunities. It's huge for the future of this hockey club to think, you know, you'll probably get still two, three more seasons out of this kid. And really, the sky's the limit when you think of the fact that he's, you know, 70-plus points his rookie year.
Probably the big turning point of the season for Saginaw this year, of course, you know, going into the year, you guys were touted as one of the better teams in the Western Conference, and it would be one of the teams to look out for this season. Didn't start off very well this year, kind of a 500 record going through November. The coaching change came down with Troy Smith on the way out and Chris Lazary on the way in. And, you know, of course, we were just talking about guys who you think should win awards. And again, Chris Lazary, as soon as he took over behind the bench, this team really seemed to skyrocket. And again, you know, he was nominated for Coach of the Year, but did not win it. That honor went to Andre Tourney in Ottawa. And again, no disrespect to him, but it's one of those awards. It's like, really? Chris Lazary didn't win that? Because he certainly did a hell of a job taking this team and turning it around at a time where things just seemed a little bit stagnant early in the year.
Yeah, stagnant's a good word for it, because it wasn't horrific. It wasn't terrible. But at the same time, it wasn't where expectations were. And, you know, our general manager, Dave Drinkel, you know, coming into this year, figured to be at least competing for a division championship, and where we were at that time, we were starting to fall back in that race quite a bit, to where I believe there was a stretch there in November where we were 13 points back of Sault Ste. Marie for first place in the division. And as you start to get toward Christmas time, I think that's when you start to try to project where the team's going to finish. And credit to Dave, he was pretty proactive in this situation. If you look at the games that Saginaw was playing leading up to the coaching change, they were not close, unfortunately, for the Spirit. And they needed something to turn in the right direction here. So Chris Lazary takes over at that point in mid to late November. Team goes on quite a run right away with him behind the bench. And then obviously the addition of Justin Murray, first and foremost, was a very big one. He solidified the back end. and allowed Dave Drinkel to make a move and go get McLeod and Tippett in two separate trades from Mississauga, and then all of a sudden the team was rolling. But yeah, there was probably two or three turning points throughout the season where, you know, I thought the first one was Lazary being hired. The second was the addition of Murray. And then it was almost like, okay, we have a chance at not only winning this division, this is a team that can be competitive, but we're a couple pieces away. So then you go out and you get Tippett and McLeod, and then next thing you know, it's a division championship and, you know, one of the top four teams in the OHL.
Getting ahead to the playoffs here, of course, you know, the second round is something that even the Saginaw has had a tough time getting to in recent years. It had happened before. I think there was a stretch for 3 out of 4 years back around 2009 to 2012 in there that the Spirit were making the second round on a bit of a regular basis, but could never kind of quite get over that hump. I don't think it ever gotten past game six of the second round. Things, you know, started off good for Saginaw in the playoffs this year. They actually won their first seven games. They swept away the Sarnia Sting, a bit of a comeback win in overtime in game four to finish that series out. Good way to start the playoffs. And then, of course, came the battle with Sault Ste. Marie. And, of course, you know, down the stretch, you guys were neck and neck with them for so long before you kind of pulled away at the end to collect the division title. Good series, I'd imagine, as far as getting out on top. As I should say, you know, getting that 3-game-to-none series lead is something that I think a lot of people weren't quite expecting right away. I know a lot of people were picking Saginaw to win the series, but were you guys surprised at all that you were able to jump out to such a big series lead over them?
Yeah, calling the games, I thought that series was going to go 7 games. Nothing that I had seen in the regular season would lead me to believe otherwise, that one team was going to roll over the other. It was too tight. You know, we were 4-4 against them in the regular season. They came into our building and won a big game late in the regular season, albeit in overtime, and that point did cost them the division, but they ended up winning the game. So they came into our building, won a big game. We came into their building a couple times in the regular season and walked away with 2 points. So it was that tight. And for us to get out to a 3-0 series lead, one, it had a lot to do with the fact that, you know, Owen Tippett got out to quite a start in the OHL playoffs, and he was playing next-level hockey. Ryan McLeod, Cole Perfetti, same thing. That line was really going, specifically in those first 3 games. And I was a little shocked that Saginaw was out to that 3-0 lead. And I just knew in the back of my mind that, you know, Sault Ste. Marie's not going to go down without a fight. They got a lot of proud veteran guys over there and a couple of guys that know this is going to be their last junior game. And then obviously some overagers that have been around and played a lot of games in this league. And they're not just going to roll over because they're down 3-0. And sure enough, they put together a really strong effort in games 4 and game 5. And, you know, when they came into our building and won game 5 to extend the series back to the Sioux for game 6, myself, I was a little nervous, but I remember taking the bus up there and we practiced the day before game 6, and it was as clean and sharp of a practice that I've ever seen in my career. Like, I don't recall them missing a pass. I think Ivan Prozvatov might have let in 2 or 3 goals the entire practice. I mean, they were locked in. And I just remember after walking away from the rink that day, there's no way we're going to lose game 6 if they play like they practice here today. And they were locked in. And they for me, outside of game 2 where, you know, Saginaw won by quite a few goals, I thought they played their best game of the series in game 6 to close them out, and it was really impressive because they were able to do it in their building.
That took Saginaw to their first ever conference final, obviously a big moment in team history to do that, to beat a division rival like the Sioux to kindly get over that second-round hump. Of course, home ice in the conference final, a big thing for Saginaw as well, and you go up against a Guelph team that had just, you know, had a war with the London Knights coming back from down 3-0 and, it kind of seemed like that in game one of the series, where Saginaw, of course, had that 5-goal second period and won the game 7-2. But really, the game I think that most people will really remember from this series will end up being game two, and the calls and the craziness that was specifically the third period and overtime of that game.
Yeah, Steve. I mean, it was one of the wildest games I've ever called. It was a tight game. It was 2-1. In the third period, and Justin Murray gets called for a 5-minute major for head check on Mackenzie Entwistle and gets thrown out of the game. And Guelph is able to score twice to take the lead 3-2. I think it was Ratcliffe and Phillips. And then the next play is a long wrist shot from just inside the blue line, and Ivan Prosvitov makes the catch. And again, Saginaw still killing a penalty here in this situation. Ivan doesn't see, he wants to play the puck. He doesn't want to face off in the defensive zone here. Instead, you know, bats it over the glass out of play. And the rules are there. They were imposed upon him, and he got not only was he thrown out of the game, but it was a 5-game suspension as well. Playing devil's advocate and looking at it the other way, had they have called a 2-minute penalty there instead of a, you know, game misconduct, Saginaw might not have come back to tie that game, because it would have been 5-on-3 for a full 2 minutes there with the 5-minute major to Murray and then a 2-minute penalty. So it's interesting how things work out. But again, Prosvitov thrown out of the game there. Tristan Lennox comes in. Isaac Ratcliffe ends up taking a penalty. Saginaw's in the middle of a player change. The door is open, and Ratcliffe pushes Damian Giroux into the open door and gets called for a penalty there. And Bodie Wild ties the game. And then on a weird bounce, it seemed to bounce through two or three players' legs, McLeod is able to score in overtime and win it for Saginaw. And, you know, I couldn't help but thinking at the end of that game, man, like Guelph had that one sewed up, and they took a late penalty and really cost them the game. And all I can remember is, man, like maybe the Saginaw team is a team of destiny when you see a game like that. And I just thought Guelph outplayed us in the final 40 minutes of that game, and to have it go Saginaw's way, you know, up 2-0 going to Guelph. It was, at that point in the series, it felt like, man, if Saginaw could win the next one, that third one could be the one that's the difference. The Storm had fought so hard and in round two to advance. I wasn't sure the will of that team at that point. How much did they invest in that second round series? And it was just, obviously, at the end of the day, they did it all over again, and certainly this is one of the most impressive playoff teams probably in OHL history, or it's got to be up there.
Yeah, and you just mentioned McLeod getting that overtime goal in Game 2, probably in the grand scheme of things, or at least at that time, probably one of the biggest goals in Spirit history. And we have to give a bit of a shout out to Ryan McLeod, who just hours before this interview actually signed with the Edmonton Oilers. So he signs his entry level contract. Good for him. And certainly a memorable half season with the Saginaw Spirit for him. But, you know, as we get into the rest of the series, and you were talking about the Storm comeback, I mean, the big story kind of became Tristan Lennox. I mean, after the Prosvitov suspension, you know, Lennox had to take the net for the rest of the series. And a lot of people, when that was announced, you know, kind of said, well, here's where Guelph can really change the tide in the series. You've got a rookie netminder coming in, a kid who had done well in the games he had played in, but certainly had not played nearly as many games as Ivan Prosvitov did. And while Saginaw did end up losing Game 3, to me, Lennox was by far and away the best player on the ice that night.
Yeah, he put on a show. I think he made 41 saves in Game 3. And, you know, I think the one thing from Saginaw's perspective is they wanted to protect him a little bit better than they did in that first start. I thought Tristan exuded a lot of energy in that 41 save game. But at the end of the day, he's a young kid, and he was obviously very excited to get the opportunity. And I thought what was the most important out of all of it is that he was ready for it. I mean, He's a backup goaltender. He knows he's a backup goaltender. He also knows that as long as Ivan Provozov is healthy, he's most likely not going to play. So for him to be in game shape, ready to go, and put forth an effort like that was very impressive to me. Shows the character of the kid and just how seriously he takes this moment, and bodes well for the future of this hockey club. So just really impressed right off the bat with Lennox coming in. Even though Saginaw takes the loss in game three, he was by far the best player in a white jersey that night for the Spirit.
The Spirit came back with a big win in game four, and that really seemed to turn the tide back in the Spirit's favor. And honestly, to me, it was actually probably one of Lennox's more quiet games because the team in front of him just played so well, and Saginaw gets a pretty solid 4-1 win on the road. They get that 3-1 series lead, and as many people wanted to say, well, Guelph's come back before, it certainly felt a little bit different because this is, you know, this is a very talented Saginaw team, and on top of that, Saginaw was headed back home for game five. As we now know, you know, Guelph won the next three games, and you know, did so by, especially in the next two, outscoring Saginaw by a wide margin and outplaying them. In your estimation now, you know, we'll get to kind of game seven on its own, but through games five and six, what do you think kind of went wrong for the Spirit where they allowed Guelph to get back into this series?
Well, I mean, I would have to refer back to the coaching staff here and kind of what they thought of the series more so than myself. You know, I think it was more of what Guelph did in five and six than what Saginaw didn't. The Storm just, I mean, they checked so well. And it started in game three where they really focused on taking away time and space. I can remember multiple times on the broadcast saying that they were playing big boy hockey for the first time in the series, and they had to. That was going to be the difference in this series if Guelph could use their big bodies and physical nature to just bump Saginaw. I mean, guys like Tippett, McLeod, Perfetti, Gilmore, Giroux, like, if you can continue to put bodies on those guys, they're not, you know, Tippett obviously is a pretty large lad, but, you know, those other guys I mentioned are not big guys. And I think Guelph singled out those players and continued to put body on them every time they touched the puck and took away time and space. And every time, you know, a Tippett or a McLeod or a Gilmore got the puck on the wall inside the blue line, he's looking up and he's got, you know, Fedor Gordiev lining him up, or Dmitry Samarukov and his famous open ice body checks, you know, coming in. So I think that took its toll as the series wore on. There are a lot of players with Saginaw at this time of the year. As you would suspect, there were a lot of players nursing injuries playing through. There were a lot of players that were nursing injuries that couldn't play. And the biggest injury for me that happened during this series is when Mason Millman came out of the Saginaw lineup. And not only did they lose Justin Murray, but they lost Millman. And those are two guys who can move the puck very well, good skating defenseman, and, you know, Bodie Wild playing 22, 23 minutes a night. It took its toll. It took its toll. And I think by the end of the series in game seven, the job that Guelph had done, wearing down the opponent, played in their favor. Again, they were able to have another period, the second period of game seven, where, you know, Saginaw didn't really have the puck, and they were able to wear him down in that period. So I was very impressed with what Guelph was able to do, and the adjustments that they made in the middle of the series. And, you know, I thought their depth shown through their late games five, six, and seven really came through and helped them win that series.
I was shocked to find out that not only was this the first time that Saginaw ever hosted a Game 7 before, but this was the first time they had ever played in a Game 7 period in their now 17-year OHL history. So obviously, you know, going into that game, I think it certainly was being kind of billed as the biggest game in team history. especially with the trip to the final on the line and the home ice. And really, you know, you mentioned that second period for Guelph and how they outplayed Saginaw, but that game kind of started, it couldn't have started better for Saginaw in a sense with them getting the early goal. And it wasn't a sellout crowd, but it was a pretty, pretty full Dow Event Center. And the crowd was really into it all night, but, and especially at the end there, and we'll get to that. But I'd imagine, you know, the fan support in Saginaw, I thought was unbelievable in this series. And I'd imagine someone in PR like yourself, as bad as this season hurts, it certainly helps you guys build on next season and get more people out next year.
Yeah, no question, Steve. I mean, we were very pleased to see the building full as many times as it was, not only in the postseason, but the first game that it really stood out to me, January 5th, we announced the trade, the acquisition of Owen Tippett the day before we announced the acquisition of Ryan McLeod. And I believe we had something like 2,300 tickets sold on the morning of January 5th. And we ended up getting right around 5,000 for that game, which is not quite a sellout, but to have a walk-up of almost twice as many as tickets were sold the day before just goes to show you how excited this fan base was that, you know, a caliber player of a Ryan McLeod or an Owen Tippett would, you know, be willing to waive a no-trade clause to come to Saginaw and be a part of this historic run. That's kind of where it started, and I was so pleased to see that. And really from January on is where the crowd started to build and started to build. And then you got into the postseason where I think a lot of folks who don't, you know, get to watch Saginaw on a regular basis were almost shocked by the environment that the Dow Event Center brings when it's full. It is an intimidating place to play. I don't think it's an easy place to play when it's not full, but certainly when it's full, it is an intimidating place to play. It's interesting. I talked to Chris Lazary about it when he was hired by the Spirit, and he told me the one place he hated coaching was Saginaw because of the fan access. They're right on top of you. Your little area there by the locker room is not really yours. You know, you're out in the open. You're in the elements. You're in with the crowd. And I think it's something that's certainly unique to our old building, and it rocks. You know, you were in there early in the series, you were in there for game 7, and it's one of those buildings where it doesn't have to be full for it to rock, but certainly if it is, it's I put that atmosphere up against any others in the league.
And you mentioned, you know, an older building in the league. It shows kind of you get some of those weird favorable bounces off the boards. I can't think I've seen so many weird puck bounces off the board since maybe being to Peterborough with square corners, because it was certainly it wasn't a deciding factor, but certainly had everyone on their toes. As a broadcaster, you know, what was the end of that game like for you? You know, because needless to say, maybe not as high intensity or that sense of relief or joy that game 2 brought you guys and the craziness that that game brought. But game 7's ending was pretty crazy in the sense of, you know, Saginaw, I thought, had a really good push back through the third period when Guelph was kind of unable to salt the game away in the second like they really should have. Saginaw manages to kill a 4-minute power play, you know, kind of late in the third period, and really gets that momentum back. But, you know, as we know, with, you know, the empty net goal, and then Saginaw scoring right after, and you know, a rink that went dead silent is now suddenly, you know, back up to 11 again, and then of course the faceoffs at the end. What was that like calling it for yourself?
Well, it had some ebbs and flows. You know, usually an empty net goal to put a team up by 2 at that time of the game, usually you're thinking of salting it away. So what I had in mind was, you know, talking about the different OHL championship successes the Guelph Storm have had over the years, and I had time to do it. There was probably about a minute and 12 seconds left, I think, when Suzuki scored into the empty net. So my plan through that next minute 12 was to kind of tip the hat to the Storm, and and make sure that the call of them winning the Western Conference Championship was a clean one and then get it into post game. But instead, what I got was Damian Giroux scoring about 10 seconds later to make it 3-2. Again, Saginaw pulling their goaltender and getting a couple of chances. I think a couple shots were blocked and a little bit of a scramble in front of the net where they were, you know, pretty close to getting an opportunity to tie the game. Then getting a late face-off where it looked like Nate Schnarr, you know, had won it to the corner and that was it. And then all of a sudden the officials huddled together and, you know, I'm calling it as I see it. So I'm seeing the officials get together and I think it was Kevin Hastings who dropped the puck and I could just tell by looking at him that he saw something there, that wasn't right. And so when the officials got together, I'm following that, cause it appears as if Hastings saw Nate Schnarr play the puck with his glove as a centerman. You can no longer do that in the defensive zone. It's a penalty. And lo and behold, with the team out on the ice celebrating and the T-shirt box is open, the Storm were penalized 2 minutes for a face-off violation. And then there was a little bit of a clock issue where they put more time on the clock than was originally there. And then they were able to figure that out before they dropped the puck. And then again, they dropped it, and again, Guelph won the faceoff, and then it was official. And so, yeah, it wasn't to script, but then again, Steve, it rarely is.
Yeah, you mentioned that the hat box opening up. Wouldn't that have been something if on that redo Saginaw had managed to tie the game and then win it in overtime or something, and we already had a team, we would have gotten a rare glimpse at some championship gear of it that would never be used. That would be certainly something. Looking back, I mentioned, of course, you guys have the position to possibly be in this spot next year, but I'd imagine looking back, again, it stings right now, but you must be excited for what's to come next season.
Yeah, no question. I think, you know, the returning players, you look at some of the talent that this team has, and, you know, I start in net with what could possibly be the return of Ivan Prozvatov as an overager, and then probably if Ivan was to return, one of the most capable backups in all the OHL in Tristan Lennox. So I can't imagine a better goaltending duo in the OHL should Prozvatov return as an OA next season. You have the potential of Bodie Wild returning as well. However, the Islanders have some options with Bodie. Could put him in the American Hockey League if they wanted to. But, you know, the possibility is still out there. And then you have great talent on the back end in Mason Millman, who's in his draft year this year. He'll be returning next year. And I think he's going to be a star in this league before it's all said and done. And then you look up front and you got, you know, guys like Nicholas Porco, who's still kind of trying to find his way in this league, but expect him to have a big year next year. Blade Jenkins, who went a little quiet in the playoffs, but had a really successful regular season. He'll be back next season. So there's a lot of things to be excited about. And then obviously you have a 70-plus point guy in Cole Perfetti returning next year, thinking, you know, again, the sky's the limit. And if everything progresses correctly with him, you know, he could be looking at, 85, 90 points, maybe even 100 points next year as a second-year guy. Crazy to think. But with the potential he saw this year, the sky's the limit. And in terms of OAs, that's going to be the biggest decisions that the general manager, Dave Drinkel, has to make. You know, you look at possible OAs for next year and, you know, Gilmore and Koski, Riley Webb, Hayden Davis on the back end. Those are tough decisions. Obviously not everyone can be back with only three overage positions available and, you know, the possible return of Prozvatov and net. So, it'll be interesting to see how all that plays out. I'm really interested to see what happens with Cole Koski, if he even plays as an overager in this league. You know, he was fantastic this year before he got injured in March there in Sarnia. he was leading the team in scoring for most of the year up until, you know, Tippett was added, and then Cole Perfetti went on a tear and Koski came out. But I think Cole Koski, like a lot of unsigned 20-year-olds who end up playing in this league, could be a huge X factor next year, much like a Justin Brazo or a Ty Felliber this year, even going back a couple years, and an Aaron Luchuk type player that could end up, you know, leading this league in scoring, or at least close to it next season.
Joey, we thank you so much for taking some time out and reflecting on the season so soon after it come to an end. But certainly congratulations to Saginaw on easily what has been the best season, I would say, in their history. And best of luck to you and the Spirit next year.
Thanks for having me, Steve. It was a pleasure. And congrats. I know you're a fan of the Guelph Storm, and I just wanted to take an opportunity to congratulate the Guelph Storm on advancing to the OHL Championship Series. And obviously, now that the Spirit are out of things, we're, at least I am, I won't speak for everybody, but I'm cheering for the Western Conference here in the OHL Championship Series.
Well, you and me both, it's going to be an interesting final, and there'll be a lot more talk about it on this show and throughout the social media world, I'm sure. That's Joey Botano. He's the play-by-play voice of the Saginaw Spirit. When we come back, we wrap up this week's episode of the OHL Fanboys Podcast.
And they get set for the face-off and ready to go, but the linesman not happy with positioning of some players. Now has a talk with him. Now we're ready to go and drop the puck. And Schnarr is set to take this faceoff. Wins the draw. It goes to the boards. The Guelph Storm are the Western Conference champions. And we're going to the Ontario Hockey League final against the Ottawa 67s. They have done it again. A seventh elimination game. And they win 3-2 to take this series in seven games. We'll talk to you Thursday night with Game 1 in Ottawa. Storm win 3-2. Back in a minute. You're listening to Rona, Guelph Storm Hockey on CJOY.
When your team finally goes the distance, where are you
going to
say?
And we went to commercial break, and I looked down on the ice, and what's going on there? And the answer is they assessed a penalty. And maybe it was related to the face-off, because Schnarr took the face-off, so he's in the penalty box. But there can't be 3.4 seconds up there, because there was only 2.7 seconds when they took the face-off. So you cannot go add more time up there. So we are not quite done yet. By heavens, it would have figured there would be one more twist here before it was over. Oh, hand on the puck is what they call it, the Schnarr. So Suzuki ready for the face-off against McLeod to the left of Popovich. And they wind up and get ready for this one. Suzuki wins it. He protects the puck. It goes out along the boards. Wild tries to shoot it. Now they're the Western Conference champions. Okay, it took one more face-off. Can we celebrate now? Yes! Western Conference champion Guelph Storm. They win 3-2. And we will have our next hockey action for you from Ottawa on Thursday night.
Welcome back to the OHL Fanboys Podcast. As we wrap up this week's episode, really like to thank once again Joey Botano from the Saginaw Spirit for coming on and giving a retrospective on the Saginaw Spirit, especially so soon after Game 7. You could follow him on Twitter at Joey Botano. Botano spelled B-A-T-T-A-I-N-O. So give him a follow on Twitter. Definitely a great source for all things Saginaw Spirit, who, as we mentioned, should be coming back with a pretty good year next year. I don't know. I'm just excited about the OHL final, I guess. We'll see if Guelph goes into that buzzsaw against Ottawa. I guess I'm just repeating myself from the opening segment with Brian. Those were kind of my thoughts right after the game. We recorded that, you know, as you heard, as I was driving down I-75 after the game, and now here I am a day or two later here, and just having it sink in a little bit now, and Guelph going to the final. I've already got my ticket. I am going to Game 2 in Ottawa on Saturday. So, hey, if you see me hanging around, I'll be in a Nate Schnarr Crimson Guelph Storm jersey. If you see me in Ottawa on Saturday, feel free to come say hi. I'll be there, and hopefully Guelph can actually win one of the first two games this time. And we'll see what happens. It should be a good OHL final this year, as 12th tries to be the comeback kids, and Ottawa goes for that 16-0. We'll see if they could be the first ever team to do that. Of course, you can follow the OHL Fanboys podcast on Twitter at OHL Fanboys, and you can subscribe to us on iTunes and Spotify. Brian is on Twitter at Toast84, and I am on Twitter for anyone who wants to see me having a heart attack over the next 2 weeks. So, you can follow me on Twitter at SteveMcLean888. Thank you all so much for listening, and happy OHL final, everybody. For Brian Thompson, I am Steve McLean. So long, everybody.
You've been listening to the OHL Fanboys Podcast.